Come gather round, marketing leaders, wherever you roam. It's time to listen to CMO Combo on your phone or any other device you prefer. This week, we're sitting down with another fantastic marketing leader, Sylvain Giuliani, head of growth at Sensis. And Syl has been good enough to put his entire profession on the line as we ask, should we even be talking about growth during economic downturns and cost of living crises? But if we aren't focusing on growth anymore, what's marketing actually for? Stay tuned as we dig into these questions and more. You've probably seen the news about how short the average tenure is for CMOs. Make sure you don't just survive, but thrive with the Alliance's C-Suite Masterclass. Whether you're looking to climb the ladder or currently an experienced marketing leader, you'll find everything you need to navigate the modern C-Suite. Across 4 months, you'll learn from experienced executives from leading brands like Trustpilot, Slack, Samsung, and more on how to drive results, inspire teams, and secure your place at the table. Don't be another statistic about the tenure of CMOs. Instead, join the ranks of the world's greatest business leaders. Check the link in the show notes for more information. Hi, Sylvain. Welcome to CMO Convo. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to chat with you today.
It's an exciting time to be having this conversation. I was saying to you before the recording, I was like, oh, recession era marketing, maybe we were jumping the gun there. But then as of time of recording, we're literally days from the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. So we'll see what that goes in that direction.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in the next 2 weeks.
But before we start digging into all that good stuff about the point of marketing during a recession, maybe you could introduce yourself to our audience, tell us a bit about yourself and why you wanted to cover this topic in particular today.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I joined the workforce just a bit before, you know, financial crisis of 2008. So I kind of understand a bit how things happened in 2008 and the year following that. I feel like a lot of people joined the workforce, especially in tech, after the financial crisis and just experienced like the big boom cycle where like profitable costs, like, you know, we just have more money all the time. It's easy. It's just happy time and up and to the right all the time, right? So I think it would be good to talk about this. My career, like I said, started before 2008. I was in tech startup most of my career. Before Sensis, I was at Pusher for more than 6 years, where I led sales and marketing. There, ultimately becoming the CRO, opening the office in America, and we had like thousands of customers. And then 3 years ago, I joined Sensis at the early stage. There was no website, no nothing. And then again, kind of like rinse and repeat. Employee number six. We are 100 employees, and today I led sales, operation, partnership, CS, and marketing. And now, you know, I gave a lot of those Legos away, and right now I'm focusing mostly on marketing. And so, you know, I want to talk about how a marketing leader can navigate those tumultuous time. So here we are.
Yeah, awesome. And it almost seems like you're a little bit almost shooting yourself in the foot a little bit with this discussion, as you are the head of growth at Sensis, but we're going to be talking about why growth shouldn't be a focus, or at least it shouldn't be the main focus anymore.
Yes.
Are you okay for that? Is that not going to be risking stuff with your job?
No. It's all good. I mean, what is growth, right? It's just another type of marketing, to be honest.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of like people with similar titles to yourself, people who are CMOs and companies who might be having to have these conversations about why the priority shouldn't be growth. The CEOs might still be expecting growth, but now they're going to have to be explaining, I can't do the job you hired me for. That's going to be a difficult conversation to have.
Yeah, I guess it also depends what the definition of growth is. Like, you know, you can grow revenue without growing new logo, new user acquisition, right? Like at the end of the day, you know, being a head of growth or growth leader, like you just hit your growth numbers. Like it's just the numbers that is going to be changing, right? So but we'll talk about that in a minute, right?
Yeah, let's talk about what these numbers are, what's changing. Because as you said, like, for over a decade now, or maybe even more than that, it feels like, particularly the tech industry, it's all been about hyper growth, driving growth, growth hacking at all costs. What is the current lay of the land?
Yeah, I think if you think about the metrics, like historically, every marketing organization, growth organization, was focused on like, how do we get new customers, right? Like, it's basically, you want to get new customers and get customer faster and convert them faster to more revenue. Like that was basically the goal, and doesn't matter the cost, as long as, you know, you put $1 in and you get $1 back. In some cases, not even $1 back, you know, like in the Uber, DoorDash type of style. Mm-hmm. That was the goal. I think what you're seeing nowadays on the market. When I talk to peers, when I talk to our customer here at Sensus, who are also marketing leaders, right? It's very much like, hey, instead of like focusing on like, you know, acquiring new customers, we're going to move towards down the journey and like, how do we upsell customers? Like, how do we retain customers? And so marketing is very much becoming an ally of like retention that is traditionally being owned by like the CS team with like metrics like net dollar retention, right? Upsell rate, attachment rate on new SKUs, things like that, if you want to do some cross-sell. And then you're going to see marketing owning a lot more, or at least contributing a lot more to those KPIs too, I would say. Because again, this is an area that's been untapped. So, you know, if you're a selfish marketing leader, if you still want to have an impact, like you go where the low-hanging fruit are. And, you know, let's be honest, marketing team never really focused on like those type of areas, right? You know, it's always like, let's spend all our money on LinkedIn, Google Ads, on new activities to acquire net new customers, and churn is not our problem, it's someone else's problem. So lots of opportunity for marketing teams and department to have an impact on that part of the customer journey, I guess.
And it seems like, yeah, it's just relearning those very like fundamental lessons about business that a lot of organizations seem to have forgotten. There's one of the classic rules of business, isn't it? That it's far cheaper to retain a customer than it is to get new ones. So is it just going to be like, gone, Sil, gone? Yeah.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of like when capital is cheap, right? Like, let's go spend that cheap capital where we know it works, right? You know, it's like you go to the gym, right? Imagine if you go to the gym every day and you only work your arms, right? Like, it's easy. You just keep on working. You have no pain. You know the program. Like, it's easy. And then suddenly you go to the gym and we said, sorry, you can't do the arms anymore. You have to only focus on the legs, right? It's like, well, it's still going to the gym. You kind of like know how it works, right? But it's like, it is painful. You hate it. Well, it's exactly the same thing happening in marketing. It's like, you know, you've been working the five past year on like, let's acquire new customers. Like, you know, I know my paid channels, I know SEO, I know organic, you know, I know how to convert lead to MQL. You know, look at the big trends in marketing the past 5-6 years was like, how do we do programmatic ad audience building, ABM, things like that. Everything is top of funnel. And now we're going to tell you like, whoa, well, let's go where it's cheaper, right? Because the CFO says, let's do more with less. And so I think a good example of that is like, if you go to certain companies' LinkedIn ads, like I love doing that exercise, like going what they show on ads. And so before it used to be ads, I was like, check out our new, this is who we are, you should use us, like, you know, net new customer type of messaging. And now a lot of their ads is actually targeted at their own existing audience, right? And so a good example that I've seen recently was like Murali, the kind of like PLG, like whiteboard collaboration app that went, you know, big during the pandemic era, right? Like, they're showing a lot of ads that is like upsell ABM. And so their ads is going to be like, hey, 600 people at your organization is already using Murali. Like, what are you waiting for, right? So it's a lot more like upsell strategy or retention strategy at the account level. And you can see they do a lot of those kind of like highly targeted like upsell ABM ads, for example. And so that's you're going to see a lot more of that, where it's like, hey, we have the data about those customers. Like, you know, we know the 600 of those users in your organization. How do we going to target the remaining or the org to do like a wall-to-wall deployment? And historically, these type of like activities were done in a very cost inefficient way by the sales team. So it's like, let's hire 5 ADRs, right? And let's go prospect those large organization, and we're just going to throw one body at the problem. And obviously you don't have like 600K to spend on headcounts anymore to just go close like 5 more accounts. And so marketing has to come in and then do the work for cheap in a way, right? And I think that's like something that marketing is really good at, is like building system that can be scaled programmatically and repeated for cheap, right? You know, because at the end, this campaign I just talked about is like, we know who our customers are because we have data about it. We know how they're using it because we have data about it. And so we can do some quick market analysis, again, using data, LinkedIn audience, third-party demographic tools to understand how many potential customer is there, like white space revenue, essentially, right? Like, you know, if you have, let's say you're targeting marketing team at like a 500 people company, right? It's like, well, we have 5 users out of 25. Well, we know we can go get 20 more, right? And so that's easy to do. And then finally, you have like tools like ads, ad platform like LinkedIn that is really good at like targeting those people. And so now we can say like, well, go show ads to the remaining 20, right? And all of that can be done programmatically by one human, basically, right? So a lot cheaper. So that's something that I see a lot more of conversation happening, is like, how can marketing ad spend our target towards upsell and retention? Does that make sense to you?
It does, yeah, it does. So in terms of like this hyper-targeted upselling, will that mean we need different components in our tech stack, different components in our teams even, like different personnel to manage these types of campaigns? It's going to be very different to like your big brand awareness campaigns, the big flashy stuff, and it's going to require different things, surely.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things, right? I think like the people are mostly the same. Like, I mean, it's still going to be change management. Like I said, like, it's kind of like, instead of like, hey, we're going left, now we're going right. Like, people don't like to change. So like, I think like marketing leaders are going to be able to be like, hey, we used to be, you know, looking at the numbers of like new pipeline, new customers, you know, new active users, whatever it is. And now it's going to be like, actually, we are looking at those kind of like metrics. And so like internally, you don't get people coming back to you, be like, well, but like we used to be good at new users. Like, why is this like a secondary metrics now? But it's like, yeah, because that was like super expensive and we can't just rely on this. So I think there's going to be a people side of it, where it's like change management become very important. So this is like where dashboard metrics, things like that, to show that the new behaviors is having an impact and you can attract the right type of like activities again, right? So it's like, oh, look, yeah, you used to have like targeting audience that was like in the millions. Now we have a smaller ones. It's not because it's smaller audience that is bad. It's just because it's different. Like lots of this kind of conversation, even at the tactical level, would be from a tool stack point of view. I think most people, most marketing team already have most of it in place. I think the key thing that is different is going to be access to data, right? And so that's something that I see every week at Census, right? It's like people coming in and be like, hey, you know, we used to not care too much about first party data, right? Because it was all about like, we put cookies, you know, before like the cookie apologies, like, hey, we retarget people based on like traffic behaviors and like on our first part, on our own website and other people's website. Like that was basically the most data that we needed to care about. And now it's like, hey, now how do I have this dashboard in Looker that shows how my customers are using our product? How do I get access to that data to do two things, to build better audiences, you know, to do retargeting, upselling campaigns, things like that, and then to do communication across channel, whether it's like email, SMS, WhatsApp, whatever the product that you have. And because they're like, hey, I know Will has been in my app for 6 months. I know Will is a power user feature A, but we have feature B, and we know that, you know, people who use feature A and B leads to more upsell in the future. So now our marketing team is like, how do I know that Will is there so I can send them better emails to educate them on the benefits of feature B, you know, invite them to training, webinars, you know, whatever the product. And then again, like show him ads about like the benefit of that feature B, to be like, hey, people like you are using this thing to be better at their job or whatever the value prop, right? And so like you need that first party data to build this campaign. And so I think that's where there's a lot of like shift of like, hey, how do you access that data? That data in most company already exists. It's just not in Marketo, HubSpot, you know, your tool of choice, basically. So I think that's the only thing that is really changing from a tool stack point of view. The other thing that is changing is like the spend, right? Like, you know, people don't spend a ton of money on tools anymore. So I would say like, you know, like putting my vendor ad on right now, it's like a lot of company are just kind of like reducing the tool spend. So if you are selling to marketing team, it's like how do you not drop revenue and focus on like retention, or how do you help sales team you know, like demonstrate the value so you can renew flat or renew above? Like I think that's another kind of like taking the muscle of brand awareness and then moving it more like at the retention level. It's like, hey, Will, you've been using our product for 3 years. Look at all the value you're getting. Like, you know, don't think about renewing at a lower price, like, because it's the best thing since sliced bread. Like that's, again, like hack and marketing can help with that messaging. Is going to be very important in the coming months, I would say.
For sure. Yeah. So when it comes to data access, how do you get access to all this data then? If it's locked up somewhere else, what is the case for this? Like the data economy is going to be incredibly important. So are MarTech tools going to start charging people to access their first party data? Is that what's going to happen? Like,
no, I think that, I mean, this is kind of like the virtuous cycle, right? It's like, if you think about your tool like Marketo and you're like, well, I need to demonstrate value to the marketing organization, right? So, hey, look, we're going to help you send better emails, more personalized email, more targeted emails. So like they have vested interest to bring more data into Marketo to retain that kind of revenue per customers, right? And so I think this is where these tools like Census coming in, where we help connect like the warehouse to tools like Marketo. So you don't have to ask like engineer for like custom script API integration, marketing team can just kind of self-serve the data. You have other vendors like iPass, same thing, that helps like connect like systems between them, right? So I think there's a lot more interest in like those kind of like technology, like reverse ETL, iPass to bring data into your tools. I don't think like the vendors like Marketo will necessarily care about in a negative way because it makes them better, right? It helps them with this retention story too, right? And upsell story too. So I think that's going to be the company that are really going to be left behind is like the company that had zero data strategy beforehand. It's like, we as a customer, that's all we care about. We don't even know, is he actually using the thing that he purchased like a year ago? Like these companies are like, yeah, they have 2 years of like grow up that and data maturity they have to do in like a couple of months to basically be able to do those things.
That's a big mountain to climb by the sounds of it. So like, is there anything that those companies can do at this stage, or are they
I think from the thing I see out there when I talk to customers and prospects is like there's no such thing as like completely data illiterate company, right? I always say is like you don't have to build the whole data stacks mountain before you get started, right? Like you can kind of like go in a one thin slice. Something I recommend most of the time is like, hey, you have a pricing model, right? You charge per like unit of X, right? And so that is data you probably track somewhere because you're charging people on it. Like you need to be honest about it. And so usually that's the best place to start. It's like, how can I use pricing data that is attached to my model to send better emails, to do better ad targeting, right? And so like saying like, hey, you're on plan A, but you should be on plan B. Plan B has this added feature. That's what we want to upsell you from a product strategy anyway. Like that alone, if you can put in the right tools like a Marketo or a HubSpot, right? Like you will be able to send emails on those people, right? And so my campaign is going to be all the people who match those criteria, who also are on my plan A. I want them to get onto plan B as a goal. And I know to get from these two plans is I need to show them the benefit of the feature that they are missing between the two plan, right? And so like that doesn't require a tremendous amount of data crunching and a ultra mature data stack. Like, you go to your payment provider, you get the data, subscription data, and then put it into your marketing team and send starting emails about like that, for example, right? Again, not the best, but like better than nothing, I would say, to get started.
And then that is just start. Then you start generating data through those email campaigns, through those targeted campaigns as well. So it's sort of a little bit of a snowball effect kind of thing.
Absolutely. And then what you'll see more, right, is like, CS team, usually that's going to be your next new best ally, like in those kind of like campaigners marketing, because whether they have a fully automated process or not, like they have data about customers somewhere. Like it might not be the cleanest data in terms of like usage last 30 days, metrics or feature X, Y, and Z, like very granular things, but like they will be able to tell you like, hey, this account over there that I'm working with, this is the deployment of our solution so far, right? For example. And so it's like, how can you take that kind of like raw data, clean it up? And yeah, it might be a bit of manual labor there, but like how do you clean it up to send like those emails, like add them to retargeting campaign and things like that. Like, again, like that's another good place to find like good enough data to get started while you wait for like the beautiful data stack to be
So you touched on a couple of different teams beyond the marketing department that we need to be working closer with at the moment: sales, CS team. Who are the other big allies that we need on side? And also maybe like let's talk a bit about how should CMOs be sharing this kind of shift of priorities across the business? Is this something that everyone needs to know, or is it just people who have like some kind of relationship with the marketing department? Like who are the important people that need to be on side for these kinds of changes in priorities?
Yeah, I think, like I said, I mean, like anything IT data related, like I think that's like if you're not, if they were not your friend before, like, you know, go there and make friends with them, because they're going to help you get access to that data. Like, I think that's number one. I think everything that is historically post-sale, so like, I don't know if you have CS, account management, like, you know, implementation specialists, things like that, like, again, they're going to give you the same kind of qualitative feedback that sales used to give us at the top of the journey, where it's like, oh, you know, nobody's buying us because objection X, right? And so then, you know, as a marketing person, you take that objection X, you go create that content to handle that objection before they get into a sales conversation, so you can capture the people who don't even get into consideration. Like, well, it's going to be exactly the same thing, but on the other side, like, you know, when a CS person goes to do a renewal, it's going to be like, ah, you know, we like your product, but like, what about X, Y, and Z, right? And it's like, well, X, Y, and Z is going to be similar type of objection from sales. Take that, put them in an email, put that into your ads, be like, hey, as a valuable customer, did you know we could actually do these things? Like, you know, and so again, like turn that kind of like negative objection ending into a positive to help with renewal and upsell, right? So I think anything post-sales will be a good ally in terms of like help you craft the messaging. I think the other thing that you'll see more similar vein, right? Like, it's going to be event. Like, used to do a lot of event, roadshow, field event that was like net new lead. You're going to start moving into like, how can we spend our field marketing budget for retention? So it's like, instead of like a prospect dinner, right? Like, you're going to get a retention dinner with customers to keep them happy. Like, so, or like a mix of those things, right? So like, that's going to be another big thing. But ultimately, the way to align into this new world order, right, is like, it's not at the top. It's like the company said, like, I'm sure every company is like, we need to do more with less, right? What does that mean? Well, it's going to mean a lot of things for you. It's going to be same budget, reduce spend on tools, right? And so everything that's a marketing team you feel that is unfair to you because of that statement, all of your customers are feeling the same thing. So I think that's like a great way to get a bit of empathy. It's like, hey, it sucks that I can't do this thing anymore. Like, well, what is my customer can't do anymore because of this recession coming up, right? So that's a good way to get started. So like, that's number one at the start of the top, is like, what is the messaging order internally, right? What is the change of KPI coming in? And so again, we go from like new user acquisition to like those kind of like net dollar retention, like upsell rate, attachment rate type of KPI. So education on those metrics, why does that matter? How you can contribute, we're going to be big, right? And then finally, it's like building campaigns that is towards those KPI and not the old one, right? Again, it's not an end or one or the other, right? Like, it'll be, you'll still have to acquire a new customer, but like, it's probably a shift. And so I think that's like a week to week, month to month planning. And I think this is where people need to really leverage like basic change management techniques, like, you know, how do you build champions? How do you help like middle management to repeat those messaging within their team to be like, hey, you saw at the company kickoff, the CEO said this, this is what it means for marketing, because we did the marketing all ends about this. And, you know, this is how it impacts our team, and this is how it impacts you, right? It's like this kind of like cycle down messaging is going to be very important for the next 6 months for people to kind of create just a bit of like the new normal, right? Because people are like, but we used to spend $10,000 a day on this. Why can't I just spend it again? It's like, well, we can't because company priority. That's important to be able to trash it back up.
Definitely. And you're going to have those kinds of conversations where you make, where you justify basically going in a different direction than what the rest of the company assumed you were there for. What about when it comes to sort of marketing, the marketing team, or like even just like the personnel within the business, not even taking into account like leadership level? How do you, usually when you start hearing about companies having to do more with less, start talking about efficiencies, yeah, that's when people start get worried about their jobs. That's when people start get worried about redundancies. Yeah. How can you communicate the shift in priorities that manages those expectations? Because obviously you might not be able to promise there's not going to be redundancies, but how can you frame the messaging in a way that supports the people who are feeling worried at the moment?
I think that's like, goes back to like good management 101. Like, I don't think the recession has nothing to do, but like, you want the people to go, like when they wake up in the morning, like they know what success looks like for them that day, that week, that month, right? And that needs to be super transparent. and that expectation needs to be clearly communicated, right? So like people who are worried are people who wake up and like, what is my goal at this company, right? You know, it's like, am I in charge of like KPI X? Am I in charge of delivering Y and Z as an asset, right? Like if people know what they need to do and they see a path to achieve that goal, like, you know, they should not, like people are not going to be worried about their job, right? Because like they know they're performing to the expectation. After that, you know, if there's layoff because company is going under, like it is what it is. Like there's not much you can do about it as an individual. But like, I think that's something that is happening across our company. When you look at the layoff, it's like to trim the fat, because it's like, well, what is Bob and Lisa here really doing, right? Since like we just hired them, they're just one body, and like they don't even know what success looked like in their job. And so I think if I was if I was an employee reporting to like a marketing leaders, right, like I would go to my boss and say like, hey, can you help me define what's my scorecard here? Like, you know, at the end of the year, what does success look like for me? What are my metrics? Like what do I need to deliver, right? And then I would hold my boss accountable to those deliverables, like on a weekly update, like, you know, be proactive, be like, hey, you said I was supposed to do X, Y, and Z. I'm doing it. Like, you know, I'm tracking positively. Is there anything that you're seeing that is missing from that? Like, you know, very much like managing up as an employee, but the same thing as a marketing leader, I would take stock into my team. You know, I would be saying like, these are everybody's high potential performance, right? And then on this two axis graph and be like, who is like a high potential high performer? Great, you know, let's give them more, even more responsibility and, you know, accelerate the career path, like by giving them more. Everybody in the middle, like, you know, I would be like, okay, these are my squad players. How do I make it crystal clear what success looks like for them to be retained and achieve their goals? And if everybody on the bottom, right, you know, it's like, give them the opportunity to shine, because maybe they were mismatched in the past, but like they should have a clear OKRs, whatever performance framework you want to use at your company, to be like, hey, this is where you are today. It's not great, but that's on me, not on you. Like, this is your new plan. Like, you know, not a paper or anything like that, but it's like, this is a new expectation of this new world. I expect you to do this. I believe you can do it. Let's go and do it, right? Like, and again, at that point, like if they fail or whatever, like that's, you know, ultimately as a manager, that was a bad eye on your part and you're the one to blame. But like, I would say taking stock of your team is very important at that point to see what do you have and what you can do with it. And again, like, also, it's a good exercise to do to kind of like help with this change, right? It's like, hey, Will, you used to be only focused on like net new lead. Like you were a high performer, high potential. Now I want you to do more than just net new lead. I want you to go own like yield events, like yada yada, right? Because I believe in you that you can stretch there, right? Like I feel like that's a good opportunity to do both at the same time. But as an employee, I would definitely look up how to manage up to guarantee your job is there. At least there's no reason for you to be fired. For sure.
Definitely. I think the honesty, the transparency side of thing is very important. If you look at some of the redundancies that have been handled recently, particularly in the tech world, people waking up to emails, like being locked out of their computers without any warning, that kind of thing. Like, and that's just going to have a knock-on effect on the talent that you do try to retain. They're not going to stick around at a company that treats their employees like that, even if they're being redundant or not. So I think the honesty, the transparency thing is a great way to go.
But it goes back to like the 2008 kind of like cycle. Like, you know, most you have to think that most managers and leaders right now, they never had to have like very hard conversation that was like macroeconomic, like macroeconomic trends that are impacting you and you can't do anything about it. Like, you know, because before it's like, well, Will, sorry, I'm not going to give you more budget because, you know, X, Y, and Z. Like here's like, you are forced to have conversation that is out of your control, right? And so like it's very difficult to have those conversation compared to before, right? Like there's no good answer to be like, hey, sorry, you're a good team member, but we need to let you go because budgets are not here, you know, the company's running out of money, yada yada, right? Especially in tech startup, right? And so that's where having a manager who is good at like internal communication, like managing expectation and transparency is super important, because you want people to be, yes, they have my back. You know, it's very clear where the bar is. It might be a like insanely high bar, but at least I know where it is, right? Like compared to you wake up in the morning, but like, feels like if I write a blog post, I'm doing good, right? And then on the other side, your manager is like, I don't even care that he writes blog posts. I want, you know, I want upsell, I want revenue, I want pipeline or whatever, right? And that's the worst thing that can happen, really.
Definitely. And what about when it comes to sort of communicating changes in priorities publicly? Like, is that something that's a good idea, or should you be keeping that sort of behind a bit of a barrier, a bit of a Berlin Wall between what your customers, what the public knows, and what you and the company needs to know about what's going on internally?
I think it depends so much on like the company, the market, like the company culture, right? Like, I feel like there's a, like, consistency is kind of like important when you're kind of like public facing, right? Like, you don't want, like, you know, as a buyer of a solution, like, you know, I don't want to buy a solution from someone that keeps flip-flopping every other quarter, right? Like, or every big event is like, oh my God, there's something happening. It's like, now we're doing this, now we're gonna, like, you know, you want to build like that confidence, right? So I think that's like very important to take that into consideration. Like, you know, like, I would not go to the market and be like, yo, at Census, we decided like big change, and that's like, you know, and then don't worry, it's not gonna impact you. It's like, I didn't wake up this morning to have a vendor tell me that big change are coming. Like, you know, I have other things that I need to worry about. But on the other side, if you were transparent from the day one, like, people have that expectation. It's like, hey, Census is a super transparent company. They always communicate every change to me. There's a recession now and they're not communicating. That sounds weird to me, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think this is more like PR 101 type of conversation that needs to happen, where it's like, what do we usually communicate? How do we usually communicate? Should we communicate now? Like, you know, what do we need to communicate? I think that's kind of like my recommendation, but I'm not a PR expert. So I would say that that's probably a good topic for someone else on the podcast for another episode.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine there's going to be plenty more to dig into on this topic, Cyril. So
yeah,
let's try and pull things together into maybe some golden rules about how marketing leaders should be approaching conversations around these priorities right now. Like, what should their top priorities be? Who do they need to be talking to? And what kind of information do they need to be providing to stakeholders?
Yeah, I think right now, like, the number one rule is like, what is the number that we need to hit, right? Where is those numbers going to come in from? Like, you know, if you need to build $10 million of pipeline, like, you know, do a Sankey chart, right? You know, it's like $2 million is going to come from here, $5 million is going to come from here, $4 million is going to come from here, and $1 million, it's more than $10 million. But anyway, like, those dollars are going to come from these different places. And you should look at, like, not just net new, you should look at, like, also upsells, I would say. Then because, you know why? Because the budget's going to be lower on the other side. Like, you know, you can't just say, go back to the board or the CEO and be like, we're going to make $10 million of pipeline, and I need, you know, X amount of $1 million. Like, what you're going to see at that level, at the metrics, is going to be the pipe error, like, you know, the error on pipe, like, for the budget, is going to be closer to like 10X, 14X. Like, historically, 4X was like, it's pretty good enough because, you know, it kind of covers, like, it's kind of good coverage, right? Now, like, you're going to be stretched to 10 million. So definitely lower budget, higher target type of situation. So I think that's step number one, of a clarity with the rest of executive, like, what is the number we hit, how are we going to hit it, and what do we need to hit it, right? At that point, is once this is locked down, is go to your team and, like, be very clear that this is the new normal, right? Like, this is where the money is coming from, and this is what we have to achieve it. Like, let's work together to have a plan and who's going to be doing what, right? And so, again, depending on the size of your org, like, you go to your directors, to your manager, to your IC, right? But everybody needs to be bought in into the new plan, right? And because once the plan is, like, locked down and this new way of doing, like, and this is kind of change management 101, right? It's like, we should not, you know, second guess ourselves, like, you know, disagree and commit all you want, but like as a group, we need to go towards this direction, and, like, until further notice, like, you know, until, like, issue X, Y, and Z happens, like, we're not on track on numbers, whatever, like, we're not reassessing because we don't have time for more meetings, more conversation, right? I think that's kind of like the approach there. And so similar thing, we just did the big plan. You do the same thing, like, inside the team per channel, right? Like, you go see your channel, be like, look, Will, you're in charge of, like, organic SEO channel. Like, yeah, you used to have, like, all that money to buy backlink, generate content. Like, you have less. And we also going to go towards those keywords. Like, how are you going to do this? Like, and so you put a plan together, you know, commit to it, and then go and execute, right? And I think as an employee, this is like the, these crunch time are like the best way for your career to kind of like get ahead of the game, right? Because if you can turn it around and achieve those goals, like, you know, that is like, you're going to do what you would have taken 5 years from a career point of view, you're going to do it in 1 year or two, right? So I think if you can step up to the occasion, it's going to be great at every level. But on the other side too, like, you know, like it's going to be very apparent that people are not part of this new journey, right? And so you would have, like, this needs to be very clear from a messaging point of view to be like, hey, this is the new normal. If you don't think you can jump this high, you know, bad things going to happen, right? But that's kind of like the reality of the market, really, to be honest. Like, it is so.
It is so, yeah. So yeah, sounds like there is a challenge ahead for marketers of all levels. But yeah, if you can meet that target, if you can overcome that challenge, then yeah, you are the kinds of marketers who are going to be leading the way in the next few decades, the next few generations of marketing leaders.
Yeah, and I think that's, again, like if you can do more with less, as they always say, right? Like, you know, like that sets you up for success for the future. Like, you know, you're not going to be the wasteful type of marketers. And so I think that's like a strong asset there. But yeah, I would definitely encourage people to focus on KPIs that are like CAC LTV, you know, ROI on type, like anything that is like focused on like outcome driven. It's a lot easier than just be like cost per lead, cost per MQL. Like, that's not going to be very fruitful for people, because who knows what happened to this lead? Like, what's the point, you know?
What's the point? That has been the question throughout this entire episode. So what is the point of marketing in a recession? And I think we've narrowed it down pretty well here. So thank you very much for joining me today, Sil. It's been a really, really interesting conversation. I'm sure, as you said, there is more to be explored on this subject. I'm sure we'll have more to talk about in the coming months as well, as the economy develops, as the situation with Silicon Valley Bank develops. We'll just see how things go and see how marketers respond. Yeah. Like, that's the fun side of being on this side of the CMO convo, I suppose.
Yes. I think the last thing will be like the question, you know, that we can come back in 2 years is like, is all of this going to impact like the average tenure of a CMO? You know, is it continue going down from 18 months to 14 months to 12 months? And we get CMO who doesn't stay in job for like less than a year in average. Like, that's, or it's going to go back up, you know, like go back to 2 years. We'll see in a couple of years what's the prediction. But yeah,
we'll see in a couple of years, and I hope our audience is around to listen to us cover that at some point. Once again, thank you very much, Sil, for joining me. Been a really interesting conversation. I'm sure our audience has found it valuable, and I want to thank our audience for joining us as well. We'll be back soon with some more CMO convos.
Like what you heard from this CMO convo? Make sure you hit that subscribe button and leave a rating so the whole world knows how great it was.